Hello, you're listening to Generous Questions with me, Joe Morrison. This is a podcast about philosophy. It's made at Queen's University in Belfast. If you listen to the last episode, you'll know that I'm interested in talking with our philosophy students about the work they're doing. In chapter 4, I chatted with Anya about Sextus Empiricus and skepticism. Well, in this episode, I'm talking with Rupert and his interest in ethical egoism. Like Anya, Rupert was a final year student here at Queen's studying philosophy, and this is part of a much longer conversation that we had. I've tried to trim it down to the essential bits that might explain his project and ethical egoism to you, the listener. You might have an interest in philosophy, you might not know much about philosophy, and you want to hear about the kinds of things that people do when they're studying philosophy and working on a philosophy degree dissertation. Or perhaps you just want to hear some people talking, and that's what we do. At one point I asked Rupert what he'd been reading, and he immediately pulled a book out of his bag that he's been working through. It's a collection of papers. He was super enthusiastic about the pieces in this book. And I'll put a link to it and some other resources on the podcast's website. That's www.generousquestions.co.uk. Rupert's talking about ethics and where ethical values come from. But in the background, there are a lot of other issues about political philosophy and authority and freedom and the state, and I've had to cut some of that discussion out. And what's unfortunate about that is that it's a perfect example of the kind of mixing ground that can happen in philosophy. We often find that we're talking about one thing, but we're making lots of inroads into all sorts of other debates at the same time. So if any of that interests you, that stuff about political philosophy and freedom and the state, if any of this discussion with Rupert about ethical egoism makes you think more questions about those things, I want to encourage you to get in touch and to feel free to ask questions, and we can see if we can work out some answers to them together. You can contact me on Twitter at Dr. Joe Morrison, at Dr. Joe Morrison. And that's a good way of getting in touch. Okay, over to Rupert. On with the episode.
My name's Rupert. I'm studying philosophy and politics. I'm final year, obviously. I'm more interested in. Originally, I was interested in politics, and then it sort of moved towards the political theory side of things, political philosophy. But tied into that is ethical philosophy. That's right. Really what my dissertation's about. I think if you try and, obviously they're very well matched, ethical and political philosophy, and thus I'm trying to hone in on the dissertation about the ethical side of it.
Okay, so what's the question? What's the...
So it is essentially defending ethical egoism, and that is it. And it's answering
I don't know what that is.
Three objections of ethical egoism, and ethical egoism being it is morally right to do what serves the agent's best interests.
Okay, the agent's best interests. Is always morally right to do what serves the agent's best interests. And does that claim go as far as to say it's morally wrong to do, so it's morally wrong to do things that don't serve the agent's best interests, that aren't in the agent's best interests?
Yes.
Okay. Where does this theory show up? Where do people use this?
So my interest first came about it with was first year philosophy and the good life within Jeremy Watkins's lecture, and the idea came up from Henry Sidgwick, but it's been, I think he's the first person who really termed egoism. However, it's prominent in Plato and Aristotle, very much so.
When they defend it, that they talk about it.
They talk about it. It's quite hard to pin what they really think about sometimes. Plato is more against it, I'd say, because he uses an argument called the Ring of Gyges.
I don't know that example.
If you had a I think it was Glaucon was the person talking to him, and he said, oh, if you had a ring that made you invisible, in like the Lord of the Rings, but would you just do things that you would get, you'd get away with, and you'd behave morally abhorrently. Right.
Because you just do whatever you want.
And then I think Socrates replies saying, oh, you wouldn't, because it wouldn't be virtuous, I think. Okay. It just wouldn't fulfill you as a human being, I think. And I think that's an original argument. And that then comes up again in Hobbes in the modern version. That's more about, which I talk about a bit, but... it comes up in Hobbes.
Let me get this clear. This is the way you first said it is about what moral rightness is or moral wrongness is. But then those examples seem to be cases about something more like moral psychology, like what makes people decide to act the way that they decide to act or something.
This is what I'm trying to. I need to definitely in my dissertation. I'm definitely separating. There's the argument about psychological egoism being. Oh, it is a matter of fact that humans just act in a self-interested way. That's recently been scientifically invalidated to quite a good extent. So I'm not arguing that. There are arguments to say that morality, and that's what Hobbes argues, that morality is a form of self-interested agents coming together to make a set of rules so that we're all protected, and that's an origin of morality.
So that's that sort of, is that like a sort of social contract idea that we
essentially.
I see how that links to the political then, right?
So yes,
even though we're all self-interested, we have interests that we can realize collectively, right? Okay. But you think this is a separate issue from the moral
it's
claim?
It's tied in to an extent, but I'm not arguing whether it's a fact. I'm using it to say... as part of the moral claim, an ethical egoism being that you ought to act in your own self-interest.
And does anyone take that seriously? I mean, is that a serious contender? Do people hold that?
Not as much in contemporary philosophy, no.
But do you? Is that because you said you're going to discuss three objections to it? Is your plan?
I am planning to defend it, and there have been some defenders of it. I think it was Moore, G. Moore, who said, I don't know exactly, but it's every philosopher feels, it might be Bernard Williams, actually, but every philosopher feels the need, even though to dedicate at least a paragraph to ethical egoism, just to say, right, this is why it can't be. And I just feel that it's not really dealt with in a very, there have been lots of objections and there's lots of discussion to it, but I just feel that there are ways in which it could be defended that haven't been defended.
So you're thinking no one's actually... you think that there's a job that you can do, like whether you believe it or not, you think there's a job that you can do, which is like, well, let's at least take it seriously. Like even if anyone wants to take something off the table in philosophy, they should do so having engaged with it properly. And that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there have been... I saw a guy called Jesse Kalin, who's... He's got an article in defense of ethical egoism, so it is talked about quite a lot. One philosopher who does really back it to as part of a philosophy is Ayn Rand, and I think she's quite a problematic example to put in. So I'm treading carefully around that.
So part of the worry would be if you end up as an ethical egoist, you end up in bad company with some people who.
That's
don't.
It. It's right. sort of seen as quite a niche. Is also parts of niche's theory is seen as egoistic to an extent. And
the worry is that this sort of you don't want to be tainted by other things that these people.
Yeah, I think it gets quite an unfair rap of being an evil philosophy, and I think it could be. When really addressed properly rather than disregarded, I think Williams in his critique, he calls the selfish creature that we get left with. And I just think it's a little bit unfair and emotive.
Because there is something different between being selfish and being self-interested, right? Those seem
to be... that's a distinction Kalin makes. Self-interest is thinking about your overall happiness and if it makes... And that allows for a lot of scope if your happiness is doing charitable work and you find your calling in that, then that's what makes you happy, and that means that you should do it.
But it doesn't mean that you're selfish.
Yeah. there is an issue with that, I find, that it doesn't make a bold enough claim, really. It's a, essentially saying, oh, do what makes you happy and do what you think's right, which doesn't really, isn't really a theory in itself. It just...
It's just
saying do what you want.
It's like a recipe, yeah. but not a theory.
Yeah. And there's also the case of if you're doing charitable work, this is Joel Feinberg mentions this. He says, well, I use the example of Abraham Lincoln rescuing a sow's piglets. And he said, Abraham Lincoln said, oh, I wouldn't have had any rest all day if I didn't rescue those piglets. And
Because of the noise they were making.
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. Right.
And I wouldn't have had any rest all day. And
so it's not like he was acting.
He said, "Well, I'm acting selfishly because I want to rescue the piglets, but
I actually just want to. I want my own thing."
But right. Feinberg sort of says, "Well, actually, there must have been something about those piglets that made you inclined to go there." And it's more of a critique against psychological egoism, but the point still stands that if you want to do. If you want to act in a self-interested way and that self-interest is to work for charity, then there must be something good about charity in itself.
Huh, okay, right, good.
And I think that that's perhaps where but the claim needs to be bolder. And I'm not quite sure, as of yet, I'm writing that, this is the final chapter I'm writing.
Good,
I just need to find the line of saying it needs to, and this is the first objection that I'm dealing with, is that egoism needs to... it needs to cater for and accommodate feelings like love, compassion, empathy.
And that now sounds like it's not straightforward egoism anymore.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like it's egoism plus things other than the agent's best interests are also relevant.
Yes. And I think that you've got to be able to maintain being an egoist whilst being able to accommodate the feelings of love, happiness, friendship, all of that. And I think that's the line that needs to be very carefully walked upon.
So the line you're trying to walk, let me just get this clear, is that you want to say, look, there's something right about the ethical egoist claim. It's been pastiched, it's been dragged through the mud. People have caricatured it. There's something you want to say that's right about it, which hasn't really been properly theorized, that people haven't really looked at it in a sophisticated enough way, or maybe they're starting to. But you want to concede that it needs to be augmented, but with some additional understanding about maybe loyalty, love, friendship, family.
Yeah.
But in so doing, you don't want those claims to sort of nullify or contradict or take away or refute or hollow to take away the egoistic part of the egoism.
I think essentially what it's got to be is that love, things like the example of love is a really key one.
Yeah,
that love can be thought of as advanced interest, if you like.
Yeah.
If you love someone, then they love you back. Then that makes you happy. Your personal welfare is improved. And although it's a very crude, perhaps not very romantic way of putting it, you could say that. And I think that's something that could should be noted
Let
as
me
well.
Get this right. So the things that are that seem to be, interestingly, they have a sort of moral claim on us in a way that at first glance appears to go beyond just a calculation of our own interests, right? They just seem to be important. Like you say, charity, we think, makes like the piglet squealing make a particular call on us, which is to do with it, the object, having some sort of moral importance. And it goes beyond our own interests. And one of the things then you're thinking is, maybe an egoist can explain that distinctive call in egoistical terms or something like that.
Essentially,
Egoistical, not egotistical, but egoistical.
I think it's the line that's got to be carefully trod upon.
Because you don't want to be seen to be kind of deflating and taking the magic out of love and reducing it to just individual interest or something.
I think so,
You want to show that there's something that's preserved, right? Okay. Okay, this is interesting.
Yes.
Complicated line to walk.
Well, yes, and it's only the first chapter.
So, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about these. What are the main objections? I mean, you might have already covered them, but
the first objection is that it cannot accommodate love, and therefore the what you're with is a horrible human, essentially, and it's not very nice. That's the first objection. I need to say you can be an egoist and a good person. You can be an egoist and love, even if it's only of interest. And it's quite a complex one we've already talked about.
Yeah.
Second objection is more of a Hobbesian one. And as I've already mentioned, it's essentially the argument that self-interest needs to be tempered in order to form a workable society.
Also, even if egoism was true, the objection would go,
well, it can't work in society.
And given that society does work, obviously egoism is false, right?
Okay. And there's the discussion around the prisoner's dilemma for that, which...
Okay, I got the first part. I didn't get the second. So what's the link with the prisoner's dilemma?
If there was two prisoners and they needed to they get given the option, they can either it's a paradox.
Is this one of those game theory things?
Yeah, it's game theory. It's essentially golden balls. You can steal your person's money, you get all the money, you can split, you both do really well.
Yeah.
You could both steal or you could both steal and none of you get any money, or you could split and the other person steals and they get all your money.
Okay, I see how that is linked to the Hobbesian point, which is like in a society we need to be able to coordinate with other people,
and it's about coordination.
Right. So these kind of coordination problems are ones. Wait, but normally I don't know about this stuff at all. I'm really in the dark.
Yeah.
Coordination problems, they seem like epistemic problems about knowledge, about knowing what you're going to do, knowing what I'm going to do.
Yeah,
but is that the same problem here? Because this sounds like an ethical problem. But
well, this is the problem with acting. Let's say if you act in a moral way and you agree to split your money with somebody, then you are open to being
ripped off, free riders are going to take advantage.
And it's essentially that if you act in an egoistic way, you will never be the victim of free riding.
Oh, good. Okay, of course.
And that's the objection against it. And the way I use that is the case of nuclear disarmament.
Mutually assured destruction. That stuff.
Means that if everyone has a... Well, I also use a real-life example. If you're a... Morality would say, trust your fellow man... don't harm your individual, don't threaten your individual. However, if you have something very valuable, then you would protect it with, guard dogs, electric wire, all of that. Yeah. You wouldn't mind doing the egoist, the prudent action.
Yeah.
And that would protect your interest.
Yeah. Yeah.
But blindly adhering to a moral code can leave people vulnerable to being manipulated and taken advantage of by free riders. And I think that that's the argument against tempering self-interest, is that everyone was self-interested, it would prevent exploitation. Good. I think that's it.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing I had to say is that it's not an argument against the state. This isn't
exactly
it needs to be. Yeah. The state has a role, and I think an egoist would say you need to make sure the state's going to protect you and those things.
Because the existence of the state makes your concerns about free riding slightly lessened, right?
Because
you've got an insurance plan in,
and you don't have to pay. Yeah. You don't have to buy loads of guns.
Yeah, okay, I see how you're going with that.
One thing I should say in that each of these problems, it ends with a promotion of egoism. So I respond to the problem and say, well, this shows that egoism is the first one, shows that it allows freedom for personal projects.
Yeah.
The second one is that it provides security for yourself.
Yeah.
And the third one, the objection is that egoism is contradictory.
Oh, right. Okay.
In that it's summed up really well by Brian Medlin, and it says an egoist can never promulgate his doctrine or universalize his doctrine, because if I am saying to you, "Oh, act in a self-interested way," then that's just going to
harm your interests.
Harm my interests. Yeah, right. And
so you shouldn't tell me. You should tell me to act in your interests, and I should tell you.
But he says that what that means is that it's contradictory in the sense that if I was the only egoism that can be really, really actually apt and consistent is
like asserted.
Everyone was acting in my interest. That's what egoism should be. I should be, I should not be saying to you, act in your own interest. Nice. I should be saying, oh, act in my interest.
So, and if that's the case, then it's not really,
it's not universifiable.
Right.
Yeah.
Because a theory is going to say, this goes for all instances, but in fact, what goes from your perspective, what goes for all interests from all perspectives is everyone should act in Rupert's interest.
Yeah.
But relative to me, everyone should act in Joe's interest. So in which case we've got two theories here, not one.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Right, yeah.
And I think, Kaelin responds really well to that. He says it's an egoism believes in a different conception of value. It's not a material conception where there's only one good. It's a formal conception where there's many different types of one good, and that good is self-interest. And
I think
that's a really good response to it, but I think that then it needs to be expanded a bit. And Kaelin in his response to Medlin saying that you could never universalize your doctrine,
right,
would he'd say, well, you'd have to hold the doctrine in silence. And I say, well, that's not really on, is it? Like, you can't do that. So I say an egoist is someone who would want competition within society, and that's someone who an egoist would be more comfortable around fellow egoists. I'm saying that if I was a world full of egoists, would the egoist like and thrive in an egoistic world?
Right. Okay.
And I think the argument is yes.
Okay.
Due to increased competition, increased understanding of self-interest.
Okay.
And that leads to greater competition, greater productivity, and innovation. I use the example of a football match. Would it be in the egoist interest if or a tennis match or whatever, if your opponent wasn't trying at all? No, you want him to have a competitive match, because a competitive match means enjoyment for you. If you're a professional tennis player, people are going to come and watch. You're going to get money, and it's through that competition that that an egoist would actually say, I want to promote this doctrine, and therefore it can still be consistent.
So there's an importance to the egoist that there is a maximum attempt on the other side for them to secure their interests.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When you're reading that stuff, the stuff on the prisoner's dilemma, do you feel like, oh, I should probably study a bit more economics and those kinds of things, like, or game theory or whatever? Do you feel like I need to go and like read what people say in those slightly more mathematical parts here? Or is it kept at a level where you don't need that kind of?
I'm not entirely sure. There have been bits where I've gone, does this involve contractarianism and something like that? But I'm trying to think. And then I think with Ayn Rand there was the do I read more about objectivism? But I think it's and then Nietzsche, do I read more about existentialism? I'm just thinking that I have read about it a bit, but I think I have one of these heads where if I read something I want to get it into the essay. I just think it's
like making a pragmatic or make an executive decision.
I think reading about it in interest, but really keeping to what you're going to write about is really important, because I think I'm just one of those people I'll read something and I want it in because I find it interesting, but then you've got to keep to what you're writing. You've got to keep to 10,000 words. So
that's excellent.
Yeah,
well, listen, thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much, Joe.
And okay, I'm going to draw it to a close there. Once again, a fairly classic abrupt ending where I haven't really properly thanked the person I was speaking with. So I want to thank Rupert here for chatting with me. Thanks, Rupert. If you want to find out more about ethical egoism or philosophy at Queen's, you can get in touch with me on Twitter at Dr. Joe Morrison, or get in touch through the podcast website at www.generousquestions.co.uk. There's a contact form on there. I've already received some comments from listeners. Thanks to them for getting in touch. Wonderful stuff. Okay, until next time, thanks for listening.